Well, Aspen Airport, as far as requirements, is like I'd say almost any other airport. You need to be a licensed pilot or a certified pilot. For a trained pilot, at a minimum, would be a private pilot with 40 hours of flight training.
Flying takes experience and brains, of course, but is that a fairly easy thing to obtain?
Anybody can learn to be a pilot, especially with enough training. It's an exciting hobby, and a great profession. And 40 hours, it doesn't always sound like a lot, but if you ask someone who's in flight training, it's quite a bit of flight time. And many people take extra time just simply because they do extra flights with their instructors. So they may get 40 or 50. And then, like with the weather in Aspen, as a flight crew member flying into Aspen on the day of the incident and the accident, the weather was bad. And so to fly into Aspen on that day, you would have also needed an instrument rating. And an instrument rating requires another 40 hours on top of the initial 40 hours of training. So they're going to have, at a minimum, 80 hours of flight training. And 40 of those would be underneath the basically a view limiting device, teaching the pilot to fly the airplane solely on instruments. It's definitely a lot of training. There's a lot of stuff that you learn. It focuses on everything from basic procedures and controlling the airplane to decision making, which for many pilots is actually the most important part. It's relatively easy to become proficient in operating the aircraft itself, but then learning how to make strong decisions as a pilot in the airplane to evaluate weather and conditions around you, that's what a lot of the training centers on.
And that instrument rating training that you mentioned, I think it's been described as wearing kind of a plastic helmet or a hat to make sure that you can't see outside while you're figuring out how to fly. Is that right?
That's right. They call it a hood, and it's basically a big plastic visor. It's probably about almost up to a foot long, and you just strap it on your head, and so you can't see out the windshield, which is for a student transitioning into instrument training is quite an experience because it definitely you lose your sense of bearings initially, and it takes some time and some practice to get used to it. But once you're done, you get very proficient on controlling an aircraft just by reference to instruments. And many students, especially if you're located in areas that get bad weather, they'll get a good mix of flying in actual conditions, actual bad weather with clouds and low visibilities, as well as, flying in good weather when they're wearing a hood or a view limiting device.
And are they actually in a plane while they're doing that, or is it a plane simulator?
You can do both. The FAA requires 40 hours of instrument training for the instrument or for the instrument rating, but some of that can be done in either a flight training device or in a flight simulator. If you're getting your training with Aviation University or a large school like Embry-Riddle or the University of North Dakota, you're going to do a lot of training in a simulator. The simulators in that case are oftentimes more expensive than the airplanes, but they can provide some very, very realistic situations and help pilots develop decision making. If you're training locally, oftentimes out of what they call an FBO or basically the facility at your local airport, they may not have a simulator, and so you're going to do most of that training in the actual airplane.
Interesting. So, an international corporate pilot, that's a pilot who's flying a private plane, and it seems like that's the kind of pilot who was involved in this crash. They essentially then would have gotten their regular flying certificate and then would have been cleared for flying in bad weather, and that's it.
They would, as a professional corporate pilot, they would have held at a minimum a commercial certificate, but most likely an airline transport certificate. So they're going to have anywhere from 250 to 1500 hours plus a significant amount of flight training and flight experience. And then there's going to be two pilots. There's a pilot in command, which everybody typically calls a captain, and then what they call a second in command, which in the airline world they would oftentimes call the first officer. And so, typically, though, to fly an aircraft of that size, a Challenger 600, it's a large airplane. It's typically a well-paid pilot position, and so that's definitely going to be a pilot who's got quite a bit of flight experience. Probably has spent many years in the industry. As far as training goes, they're going to be trained specifically in that airplane type. For example, if you're going to be the pilot in command of a Challenger. Like this was a Challenger 600, you're going to go down to a facility like flight safety, and you're going to spend time in a simulator learning how to operate that specific aircraft, execute instrument procedures into different airports, practice emergencies and failures. And then insurance companies are typically going to require the crews to go back to train every 6 months or every 12 months. It really, it's not a legal requirement, but the insurance companies are typically going to require flight crew training just to insure the aircraft.
So it's likely that these pilots had a lot of experience, particularly in that kind of aircraft, but we don't know whether they had training experience specifically for Aspen or other difficult mountain airports.
Absolutely. And you know, that's one of the most important parts about flying is realizing that as a pilot, you oftentimes have a lot of experience in your aircraft type. But to fly into an airport like Aspen, you do not need any specific training. Now, an airline, they're going to receive specific training to go into that airport because they have more strict regulations. But as a private operator, you can operate into an airport like Aspen on your own as long as you are current and proficient to fly. And those are the same rules that would apply flying into your local airport in Denver Centennial or anywhere else. It's the pilot's own experience then that they have to weigh personally before deciding to go in there.
And what do we know about this aircraft? Is it particularly harder or easier to pilot?
I would definitely not describe it hard. The Challenger 600 is very similar to the regional jets that most people are familiar with, the Canadair regional jets, the CRJs that you're going to see operated by many of the regional airlines. And in fact, for many pilots, when they enter their professional flying career at an airline, the Challenger, the CRJ, is going to be one of the first aircraft that they start flying professionally. And so I wouldn't call it very, very difficult. What I would say, though, is this. If you look at Aspen as an airport, any aircraft, including a jet, going into that airport without training and experience, it can be very, very difficult. In fact, on the day of the accident, Aspen's a unique airport where you have to go in one direction because of the mountains and then take off and fly out the other direction. And in this case, during the accident, there was incredibly strong winds blowing at the aircraft's tail, so pushing the aircraft along, which is typically not how you would land an airplane. You almost always land an airplane with a headwind. And so when you talk about challenging airplanes to fly, I would say that the Challenger itself, it's a wonderfully safe airplane. It's got a great safety record, and it's in use at many airlines in the airline version. But the conditions flying into Aspen that day were exceptionally challenging. And even, I would say, you know, absolutely hazardous to pilots who were not trained in and familiar with operating in those conditions. Unfortunately, the reality in aircraft and in aircraft accidents is airplanes themselves are very, very safe. And the equipment that we have on airplanes is just unbelievable. The amount of information that's available to a flight crew and the fact that most of them have an opportunity to use every single bit of it. But oftentimes what it comes down to is the pilot's decision. Do I continue to land or do I go around? And if you attempt to land once, do I come back and try to land again or do I deviate and go to another airport? So it oftentimes comes down to what they call ADM or aeronautical decision making. And I think that's probably going to be pretty central in this accident.
Alex, thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
Absolutely. Thank you.